Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram from Friday, February 16, 2024, Section A, State and Local News. Craddock decries rise in ridiculous federal initiatives challenging energy industry, by Mella McEwen. Federal regulatory initiatives are challenging the Railroad Commission as never before in its century-old history. Railroad Commission Chairman Christy Craddock decried initiatives from tailpipe emission standards she said are designed to force consumers to buy electric vehicles to methane emissions rules she said are crippling the state's oil and gas industry. Addressing the monthly membership luncheon of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, she said once the Environmental Protection Agency's finalized methane rules are published, the Texas Attorney General has been asked to file a lawsuit. Craddock also expressed frustration waiting for the Environmental Protection Agency to make a decision on the state's application for primacy over permitting Class 6 wells for carbon dioxide injection. She is also frustrated with a lack of guidance from the government on how to use the $79 million the commission has been given to plug abandoned wells. We have $79 million in the bank. We're ready to go, and we found out they added more requirements, she told the audience. Those include requiring the commission to go to the State Historical Society and to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service before plugging wells. We are sitting on $7 million of your federal tax dollars, and we're waiting until they tell us what to do, she said. She reiterated her call for practical, sensible regulations. Installing wind turbines and solar panels will make it possible to eliminate fossil fuels, she said. We don't wave a wand and change everything overnight, she said, or propose ridiculous rules and regulations that hamper domestic production and make life harder for everyone. Craddock, who is running for re-election, commented, "As a regulator, my responsibility is to see companies are given the freedom to innovate while also protecting people and resources." She faces Christy Clark, Corey Howell, James Matlock, and Petra Reyes in the Republican primary on March 5th. Bill Birch and Catherine Colbert are the Democratic candidates for the position. Driving in West Texas is deadly dangerous. A new report by the Texas A&M Transportation Institute measures how much, by Carlos Noguez Ramos, the Texas Tribune. Severe and fatal vehicle crashes occur at a higher rate in the Permian Basin than the rest of Texas, a new report released Wednesday by the Texas A&M Transportation Institute found. Commissioned by the Permian Road Safety Coalition, the report analyzed data from 2018 through 2022 and focuses on the 20 counties in West Texas and two in New Mexico that constitute the Permian Basin. This is the organization's first attempt at quantifying vehicle crashes occurring on the congested roads of the Permian Basin, a sprawling region that shoulders both the rush of the energy industry and everyday traffic. The Midland-based nonprofit hopes the report will spur solutions to make the region's roads safer. The difference between the rate of severe and fatal crashes in West Texas compared to the rest of the state is striking. Nearly 15 crashes per 1,000 resulted in at least one death in the Permian Basin. During the same time period, the statewide average for the same type of crashes was 7 per 1,000. Put another way, crashes were twice as likely to be fatal in the Permian Basin than in the rest of Texas. More than half of the incidents involved multiple vehicles, with the rate of fatalities of multi-vehicle collisions being three times higher. The report tracked 262 crashes in the Permian that resulted in at least one death during the five-year period. That's about one fatal crash every other day. Nearly half of those accidents happened within Midland and Ector counties, the two most populated in the region. A combined 329,000 people live in those counties, which include the cities of Midland and Odessa. Robert Wunderlich, the report's lead author and director of the Institute, said the traffic density measured by the number of vehicles and speed limits are similar to other urban areas in the state. However, the road design in the Permian is rural. Instead of the 3- and 4-lane interstates in Dallas or Houston, highways cutting through the Permian are often just single lanes. The Permian Basin is sparsely populated but heavily traveled, Wunderlich said. We've got a rural environment with fairly high-speed traffic. We see the kinds of crashes that we see in urban areas. Commercial motor vehicles used to transport property or a delivery accounted for almost half of the fatal rural crashes in the Permian Basin. That's twice the statewide rate. Michael Smith, the nonprofit's managing director, said the study confirmed what residents of the Permian Basin have long known about driving conditions. He hopes the report will enable advocates and policymakers pushing for safer driving behaviors to develop solutions. He said increased seatbelt use, reducing vehicle speed, eliminating distractions, and upgrading road infrastructure are top of mind. Additionally, Smith said the study will help law enforcement officials target hotspots and historically problematic areas in the region. It is possible to get to zero fatalities on the roadways of the Permian Basin, Smith said. The report did not surprise Paul Rhodes, a lifelong resident of West Texas who now lives in Midland with his wife. The retired trucker spent the better part of 16 years in the oil fields. Rhodes said he'd seen everything on the road, from reckless drivers racing past his 18-wheeler to inexperienced drivers working under the pressure of hauling oil-filled property within strict time constraints. The roads can be dangerous, he said. He has begged his wife to avoid driving if she could. He hopes the report will inspire law enforcement to enforce speed limits and local officials to fix the roads. Everybody is in too damn of a hurry, Rhodes, 55, said. There is no courtesy out here. Everyone is trying to get somewhere faster than the first person. MISD approves the hiring of new administrative positions by Ben Schaefer. The MISD board approved the hiring of three new administrative positions during its meeting on Tuesday. Aaron Bueno was approved as Associate Superintendent of School Improvement. Julia Willett Weekly was approved as Executive Director of Financial Services, and Wes Torres was approved as Executive Director of Athletics. According to MISD personnel on Tuesday, Bueno has 12 years of administrative experience, including roles as a Principal Supervisor, Principal, Assistant Principal, Instructional Coach Curriculum Facilitator, as well as 8 years of classroom teaching experience. MISD shared that Bueno has been instrumental in school improvement efforts at both the district and campus level during her career. Willett Weekly has 27 years of administrative experience, MISD shared. She has spanned roles including Executive Director of Federal and State Programs, as well as counseling and teaching. MISD personnel said she will be valuable to the district because of her expertise in managing state and federal programs, budget oversight, and strategic planning. All three positions were approved unanimously. Midland Development Corporation Entrepreneurial Challenge awards local businesses $500,000 by Ben Schaefer. The Midland Entrepreneurial Challenge awarded five local businesses a total of $500,000 on Tuesday. The six-month business boot camp ended last night, and the Midland Development Corporation gave a share of $500,000 to Tall City Sneakers, $75,000, Sable Controls, $100,000, Tall City Speech LLC, $100,000, Morph Health Optimization, $100,000, and Pachuco's, $125,000. The MDC said after three rounds of competition, five businesses were selected as finalists. At the beginning of the challenge a year ago, according to MDC, over 400 businesses signed up for orientation, and 62 registered to compete for the challenge. The MDC funds the challenge. UTPB administers the challenge with support from the Small Business Development Center, according to the MDC. The MDC stated that the challenge will have a direct impact economically on Midland by creating jobs and bringing revenue to the city. Gas prices in Texas, Midland, increase by Ben Schaefer. Gas prices in Midland are back above $3 after the state saw a wave of rising gas prices this week. None of the Texas metropolitan area's AAA surveys experienced decreases in their average gas price. Fuel prices in both Midland and Odessa climbed by 9 cents. A $3.03 average gas price in Midland is the second highest in the state behind El Paso, whose gas prices increased by 36 cents this week to $3.29. Gas price fluctuations continue with prices rising by an average of 12 cents per gallon week to week for regular unleaded gasoline, said Daniel Armbruster, spokesperson for AAA Texas. Fuel prices will likely continue to fluctuate throughout the remainder of February and could increase as March approaches. Regionally, Lubbock is now home to the cheapest fuel in Texas after a 4-cent increase in its average fuel price. Amarillo, $2.69, Wichita Falls, $2.80, and San Angelo, $2.81 are the next three cheapest gas prices averaged statewide, according to AAA. Gas prices in Abilene rose by 10 cents, creating a $2.92 average. Supply of gasoline has fallen by 7 million barrels over the last 2 weeks, according to the latest data from the Energy Information Administration. Meanwhile, West Texas Intermediate crude oil is approximately $2 more when compared to 1 month ago. Crude oil is the main ingredient in gasoline, and if it continues to become more expensive, gasoline prices will likely increase, AAA reported Thursday. Texas is no longer home to one of the 10 cheapest fuel price averages in the nation. After a 12-cent week-over-week increase in the state gas price, Texas' average gas price sits at $2.94. Warning signs mounted before shooter entered church by Juan A. Lozano, Associated Press. The former mother-in-law of the woman who opened fire at a Houston megachurch tried for years to alert authorities and others, including church staff, about her ex-daughter-in-law's mental health struggles, she said Wednesday. But Wally Carranza said nothing came of her action. Carranza said she believes systemic failures as well as lax gun laws ultimately led to Sunday's shooting at celebrity pastor Joel Osteen's Lakewood Church, in which Janessa Moreno entered the church with her 7-year-old son and opened fire in a hallway. Two people were wounded in the shooting, including Moreno's son, who was shot in the head. Moreno was gunned down by security officers she exchanged gunfire with. You can't put responsibility on the mind when the mind was so very ill. A healthy mother would never bring her child to a situation like this. That's not mental health. So sometimes we don't have to find a guilty party or place blame. We can just say there are systems that failed, Carranza told Associated Press in an interview. Carranza said her grandson Samuel remained in critical condition, but that he was doing better. Various questions about the shooting remained unanswered on Wednesday, including Moreno's motive and details about how she obtained the AR-style rifle she used. Carranza said her son, Enrique Carranza, and Moreno met at the University of Houston and married in September 2015. They divorced in 2022. Carranza said her son, who is currently incarcerated in Florida, didn't want to divorce Moreno and only wanted his wife to get healthy. Carranza said Child Protective Services was notified after Moreno was accused by nurses of putting adult medication in her son's feeding tube after his birth in 2016. Other concerns, including allegations that Moreno left guns unattended in her home, were also forwarded to CPS, but no action was taken, Carranza said. My great concern for Sam was that he was going to shoot himself, and that's what we warned against, Carranza said. She added that in January 2020, when Moreno and her grandson visited her in Colorado, Samuel pulled a handgun from his diaper bag and gave it to her. Melissa Langford, spokesperson for the State Department of Family and Protective Services, said CPS could not comment on the case for confidentiality reasons. Carranza also said that in 2020 and 2021, her attorney sent emails to Lakewood Church asking for assistance with intervening in Moreno's struggles, believing that Moreno's mother attended the church. Church spokesman Don Iloff said Wednesday that records show Moreno sporadically attended services at Lakewood for a couple of years, but there were no records of her being at the church after 2022. Iloff said that they were still looking, but had not found any records showing Moreno's mother attended the church. He added that church officials also had not found records of the emails sent by Carranza's attorney, but they were still looking. Iloff said in situations where someone may reach out for help, what the church can offer them is spiritual and biblical counseling. If we had reached out and Moreno had accepted counseling, then we definitely would have been more than happy to provide that. In a video message on Instagram, Osteen invited people to attend a special service at the church this coming Sunday to celebrate a time of healing and restoration. We are not people of fear. We are people of faith. God has us in the palm of His hand, and this is not the time to shrink back. This is the time to turn to God, to rally together, Osteen said. Texas law generally bans someone convicted of a felony from owning a gun for several years after they are released from prison. Misdemeanors connected to domestic violence will also trigger a ban. But Moreno's extensive list of misdemeanors, ranging from forging a $100 bill to shoplifting and assault, did not meet the threshold. Texas also lacks a so-called red flag law, which generally allows law enforcement or family members to ask a judge to order the seizure or surrender of guns from someone who is deemed dangerous, often because of mental health concerns or threats of violence. Carranza said she met for hours with FBI agents on Tuesday discussing the reports she filed over the years about Moreno. Musk pushes forward on moving SpaceX to Houston, by Michelle Chapman, AP business writer. Elon Musk is looking to move the legal home of SpaceX to Texas from Delaware after a judge in that state voided the billionaire's $55.8 billion Tesla pay package. A certificate of conversion for Space Exploration Technologies Corporation was filed to reincorporate in Texas from Delaware, which became effective on Wednesday. SpaceX has moved its state of incorporation from Delaware to Texas. If your company is still incorporated in Delaware, I recommend moving to another state as soon as possible, Musk said in a post on X, formerly known as Twitter. The change by SpaceX comes just days after Musk's brain implant company, Neuralink, moved its legal corporate home from Delaware to Nevada. Musk is a co-founder of the privately held Neuralink. Most corporations set up legal shop in Delaware because the state law is typically favorable to corporations, and experts say the change could backfire. Last month, Delaware Chancellor Kathleen St. Jude McCormick invalidated the pay package that Tesla established for Musk in 2018, ruling that the process was flawed and the price unfair. In her ruling, she called the package the largest potential compensation opportunity ever observed in public markets by multiple orders of magnitude. McCormick determined that Tesla's board lacked independence from Musk. His lawyers said the package needed to be rich to give Musk an incentive not to leave, a line of reasoning the judge shot down. McCormick's ruling came 5 years after shareholders filed a lawsuit accusing Musk and Tesla directors of breaching their duties and arguing that the pay package was a product of sham negotiations with directors who were not independent of him. The defense countered that the pay plan was fairly negotiated by a compensation committee, whose members were independent and had lofty performance milestones. McCormick's ruling bumped Musk out of the top spot on the Forbes list of wealthiest people. Musk previously wrote on X that shareholders of Austin-based Tesla would be asked to consider moving that company's corporate registration to Texas. Judge slams Texas law that lets police arrest migrants, by Acacia Coronado, Associated Press. A federal judge on Thursday voiced concerns over a Texas law that would give police broad authority to arrest migrants on charges of illegal entry starting in March, saying it would be a nightmare if the U.S. became a patchwork of states enforcing different immigration laws. That turns us from the United States of America into a Federation of States, said U.S. District Judge David Ezra, who did not immediately issue a ruling. This is the same thing the Civil War said you can't do. Ezra is considering a lawsuit filed by the U.S. Justice Department in what is the first legal test of what opponents have called the most dramatic attempt by a state to police immigration since a 2010 Arizona law that was partially struck down by the Supreme Court. It is among several court battles Texas is fighting with President Joe Biden's administration over how far the state can go to try to prevent migrants from crossing the border. The judge remained skeptical during the nearly three-hour hearing in Austin, often sharply questioning the lawyers defending the law that was signed by Republican Governor Greg Abbott. Ezra, who was appointed by former President Ronald Reagan, did not say exactly when he would rule, but said he hoped to give enough time for any appeals before the law takes effect March 5th. The measure would allow any Texas law enforcement officer to arrest people who are suspected of entering the country illegally. Once in custody, they could either agree to a Texas judge's order to leave the U.S. or be prosecuted on a misdemeanor charge of illegal entry. Migrants who don't leave could be arrested again and charged with a more serious felony. Ezra noted he has experience hearing cases that deal with border issues and is familiar with the concerns raised by Abbott and other state officials over illegal crossings, but he said he was not buying into the argument that only criminals are coming across the border, calling the vast majority of the migrants who entered the U.S. without permission otherwise law-abiding people. He also questioned whether empowering local judges to remove people from the U.S. could interfere with federal processes or protections. The state pointed to declarations by police officials who would enforce the law. Ezra responded, "I have to rule on what the law says, not what they say they will or won't do." Ezra became frustrated during an exchange with an attorney for the state who said people with pending asylum cases who were arrested under the law would not be removed from the country per their... "You just go to jail?" Ezra asked. "Yes," replied Ryan Walters, chief of the Texas Attorney General's Office Special Litigations Division, moments after saying there is no safer place than a state prison for a migrant to await an immigration court case. For months, tensions have escalated between the Biden administration and Texas over who can patrol the border and how. The Justice Department has also taken Texas to court over a floating barrier in the Rio Grande and defended the ability of U.S. Border Patrol agents to cut through and remove miles of razor wire that the state has installed along the border. Republican governors across the U.S. have backed Abbott's efforts. A heavy presence of Texas National Guard members in the border city of El Paso has denied Border Patrol agents access to a riverfront park. The agents had previously used the park for monitoring and patrols, as well as to process migrants who made it across the Rio Grande to U.S. soil. Obituaries and death notices. Wanda Bradley. Wanda Eva Bradley, 95, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Wednesday, February 14, 2024, in Midland. Wanda was born June 28, 1928, in Thurber, Texas, to Willie Hale Minnick and Nicholas W. Minnick. Wanda was preceded in death by her husband Donald and her parents, along with six brothers and one sister. She is survived by her son Larry Don Bradley and two grandchildren, one great-grandchild. Visitation will be at One Hope Church of Christ, 2503 West Ohio, Midland, Texas, on Friday, February 16th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Graveside services will be at 10 a.m. on Saturday, February 17th at Fluvanna Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Crematory Services in Midland. Memorials may be given to One Hope Church of Christ or the charity of your choice. Monsignor James P. Bridges. Monsignor James P. Bridges died at the age of 94 on February 8, 2024. His parents were Monty Ray Bridges and Lena Maud King. He and his twin sister were born in Plainview, Texas on August 15, 1929. Memorial gifts may be made to Helping Hands of Midland, West Texas Food Bank in Odessa, Catholic Charities of Odessa, or St. Stephen's Catholic Church in Midland. Raul Pena Jr. Raul Pena Jr., 82, passed away on Tuesday, February 13, 2024. Viewing will be Monday, February 19, 2024, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Funeral service is set for Tuesday, February 20, 2024, at 2 p.m., also at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Lahoma Cox. Lahoma Cox, 86, of Midland, passed away on February 14, 2024, in Midland. Graveside services are scheduled for 10 a.m. Saturday, February 24th, at Cathedral in the Pines Memorial Gardens in Tyler, Texas. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, February 26, 2024, at Fairmont Park Church of Christ in Midland.
This is Christine. I'll be reading Odessa American. These three banditas are changing the face of Texas barbecue by guest contributor, February 15, 2024, by Jamie Lozano Carver, The Texas Tribune, Lubbock. On any given weekday morning, the inviting aroma of ribs on the grill outside the Hill Barbecue Shop tell Jewel Hill's loyal customers that something delicious is for lunch. The smell from the pit is their smoke signal. The majority of the menu at Hill's is what you'd expect from any barbecue restaurant in Texas, but since July, Hill has surprised guests with a special menu from their new venture, the Barbecue Banditas. The candied ribs from their pop-up events in particular have become so popular that when Hill had to close their brick-and-mortar location one day last week, she had to promise on social media that the special ribs would be included in the next day's offerings. "My goal is for them to be sticky with a sweet pineapple flavor and crispy on top," she said. The Barbecue Banditas, which specializes in Asian-Spanish fusion barbecue, is a partnership with close friends Simone C. and Raquel Lopez. The menu goes beyond what most expect from West Texas barbecue. Their indulgent and creative food has earned them a fan following. Berea brisket ramen, bao buns with burnt ends of pork belly, sausage pot stickers, and the Banditas ribs. Texas is known for its legendary barbecue. A 2023 report named it the best state for barbecue in the U.S. While the report focuses on the food scenes in Austin, San Antonio, and Houston, it's fair to say that High Plains has meat in the game. The region that stretches from Lubbock north to the Panhandle has developed a reputation over the years for high-quality barbecue. The Barbecue Banditas are hoping to stake their claim and change the face of Texas barbecue. Women are typically the underdogs in the food industry, though they have a big impact on Texas. Nationally, women own just 34% of all restaurants, according to data from the National Restaurant Association. The rate is higher in Texas. About 41% of restaurants in the state are owned by women. Even fewer restaurants are owned by minorities. About 17% of Texas restaurant owners are Asian, while Hispanic owners account for 32%. People write women off, even in the food industry, says C, one of the Hill's partners. I'm really proud to work with women and do something that I've only seen men do my entire life. Hill taught herself everything she knows about working a barbecue pit. While she had always worked in the kitchen, it was her husband who tended the meat. Then, when he was injured last summer, Hill took on the challenge. I had to get in there and learn to run the place all on my own, or else it wasn't going to survive, Hill said. It wasn't long after that Hill proved to herself and customers she could barbecue as good as men. That's when the idea for Banditas took hold. Hill wanted to experiment with food more, but didn't want to make drastic changes to the traditional food Hill Barbecue has been known for since 2018. After giving it some thought, she made two phone calls, one of them to C. C grew up in Seminole, about 81 miles southwest of Lubbock. She moved to the area after attending culinary school in Dallas and opened her food truck, Taste Buds Food Co., in 2018. Her food is inspired by her culture. Her dad is Chinese and her mom is white, so she grew up eating a lot of Asian food. The Banditas signature sauce is similar to her dad's recipe for sweet and sour sauce. C has her own style, though, when she cooks, including dishes like a fried chicken sandwich with blueberry sauce and Filipino-style golden coconut curry. She was ready to try something different when Hill called her, and barbecue was one style of food she hadn't made before. I love making strange, different things you wouldn't find in Lubbock, and that's what I love about the Banditas, C said. Hill made the second to Lopez. The two women grew up together in Leveland, 40 miles west of Lubbock, and now they are sister-in-laws. The Banditas have a different experience for Lopez, who has been a barber for 17 years and at most cooked Mexican food at home for her family. Like Hill and C, Lopez was craving something new. Lopez is the hype woman for the trio and jumps on the chance to help prepare other items on the menu, like the Filipino mac salad, calabacitas, and frijoles charros. It's different cooking at home versus a business, Lopez said. This broadens my horizons a little bit more and opens my eyes to what goes into barbecuing. As word spread about the Barbecue Banditas and their ever-changing menu, Lopez was happy to see many of her clients wanting to know more and buy tickets. Her family has taken notice too. Lopez's dad and brothers are the ones to barbecue, and now they want to see what she has up her sleeve. I love the rush of it all, and even better that it's with the Banditas, Lopez said. Why wouldn't I want to be a part of that? The success has been a boost to Hill's confidence and proof of what she's capable of in front of the barbecue pit. Aside from taste testing, her husband, Andrew, has been hands-off when it comes to the Banditas. There have been countless situations where people in the barbecue world want to write me off because I'm a girl and can't possibly know what I'm talking about, Hill said. So this has been a cool way to show I'm here and I can do this too. Since last summer, the trio has offered the full menu only a handful of times. The three women have busy lives. Hill has Hill Barbecue and homeschools her three daughters. C devotes much of her time to Taste Buds and teaches a culinary class for junior high students. Lopez works and takes care of her young daughter, Maya, the unofficial fourth Bandita. Still, they see the Barbecue Banditas as a good example for how diverse the barbecue and food industry can be. Obviously, men can barbecue. They've been doing it for hundreds of years, C said. But I'm proud to be doing this with only women, something I've never done before, and do a good job. The Banditas' next pop-up event is expected in April. They are all being asked by their respective customer bases, so they know the demand is there. The Texas Tribune is a member-supportive, nonpartisan newsroom informing and engaging Texas on state politics and policy. Learn more at texastribune.org. Maria Rodriguez's custom piñatas add joy to children's celebrations. February 15, 2024, by Kathy Chateau. In 1990, Maria Rodriguez took a grand leap of faith following years of working at a meatpacking company. She decided to start her own business, Piñatería La Mexicana. From that time on, Rodriguez's aim was to bring joy to countless children's parties where generations have celebrated with the iconic Mexican piñata, according to the city of Odessa, which highlighted her local business. She considers her work a form of art and creates piñatas ranging from action heroes and princesses to custom requests from her clients, often requiring extra effort and skill. While piñatas may be her main focus, Rodriguez diversified her business through the years to also include rental services for children's party furniture, tablecloths, and candy bags. From the start, Rodriguez's business has been a family affair, with loved ones lending a helping hand in the crafting of the piñatas. The report noted that even her children and grandchildren help out with the creative end of the business. The city of Odessa said that via Piñatería La Mexicana, Rodriguez preserves the tradition of the Mexican piñata, making each celebration a memorable and cherished experience for children and their families. Find Piñatería La Mexicana at 623 West Clements Street in Odessa, Texas. Questions? Contact 432-664-1417. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud for February 14th, 2024. Monahan's Kids Zone Expansion Required to Meet Growing Community Need by Jonathan Harshman. The Monahan's Kids Zone, MKZ, is an amazing and impactful nonprofit organization that serves as the only dedicated facility providing after-school youth services in Monahan's. The greatest hindrance to MKZ's mission is its aging facility, a 1950s-era former furniture store. A new, larger facility is needed in order for MKZ to meet a growing need for its services in the community. And so on Monday, February 5th, I took particular pride in joining my Chevron colleague, Spencer Denton, in presenting Ward County Greater Works with a $50,000 donation on behalf of Chevron to support efforts to build a brand new, more expansive home for MKZ. Chevron's donation will go toward an ongoing fundraiser campaign. Chevron's donation will go toward an ongoing fundraising campaign to construct an 18,000-square-foot multi-use activity center that will enhance and expand MKZ's after-school programming, which currently serves 30 to 40 first through sixth grade students annually. With the new building, MKZ anticipates expanding its services to reach 250 to 300 first through 12th grade students annually. On behalf of Chevron, thank you for all MKZ does to educate, inspire, and develop Monahan's youth of today for a better tomorrow. We are honored to play a small part toward helping you achieve this goal. Jonathan Harshman is a public and government affairs advisor for Chevron's Mid-Continent Business Unit. Odessa College to Celebrate 40th Wrangler Rodeo, February 14, 2024, by Staff Report. Odessa College is inviting the Permian Basin to celebrate its 40th Wrangler Rodeo at the Ector Coliseum from February 22nd to the 24th. Tickets, which are $9.99 per day and $24.99 for the entire rodeo, including Slack, are on sale now at boxofficesolutions.net. Former OC Rodeo team alumni will receive two free tickets for Saturday night and recognition on arena floor prior to Saturday night finals. All four rodeo coaches will be recognized Saturday night. Alumni will also receive one commemorative t-shirt and the opportunity to meet and greet with former coaches the same night. The main link to watch the rodeo is tsbnsports.com/2024-odessa-college-rodeo/. Reeves County Library seeks support for summer reading program, February 13, 2024, by Staff Report. The Reeves County Library is on the lookout for energetic individuals to present its summer reading program for local youth. If you belong to an organization that can engage kids in fun activities or help them create cool crafts while educating them, then we would love to hear from you, said Daniel Alvarado, Director of Digital Media at Reeves County. The theme for this year's summer reading program is Beach Party, but we're happy to deviate from it if you have something special to share, Alvarado said. The program seeks props to borrow to make its Beach Party setup a success. See the list of items the library would love to borrow below. The scene completion date will be on or before May 1st. Let's work together to create an unforgettable summer experience for the kids, Alvarado said. To learn more about the Beach Party Scene Build, contact 432-755-0914. List of items Reeve County would love to borrow. Swim gear / clothing, beach, furniture / access, decorations, flippers, lounge chairs, diving mask, new, gently used beach towels, palm trees, snorkel, tiki torch, kiddie pools, boogie board, grass hut, flip-flops, surfboard, volleyballs, and volleyball nets, plastic pineapples / tropical fruit, diving suit, beach umbrella, seaweed, bathing suits, swim trunks, shells, coral, starfish, plastic or real, sunglasses, sea animals, plastic or stuffed animals, beach hats, beach balls, sandcastle molds, pictures of beach scenes, jet skis.
Governor Abbott reassures crowd of small oil and gas operators. The story was written by Amanda Drain. Governor Greg Abbott reassured oil and gas operators about the availability of electricity in Texas during a conference this week, telling them that, quote, power load is going to be coming to our grid to ensure they would be able to run their operations. Growth in power supply has trailed the state's stunning annual jump in population, Abbott said, noting roughly 925,000 people moved to Texas in 2022 and 2023. To keep up, he told the crowd of more than 100 gathered Wednesday in the George R. Brown Convention Center Auditorium, the state must prepare to increase its power supply by 10% to 15% each year. Quote, wind and solar is being added as we speak, Abbott said. We need more of the natural gas supply to our baseload so that when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing, we will have the power capable of ensuring that all these businesses that are coming to Texas will be able to keep the power on, end quote. Abbott's comments at the North American Prospect Expo conference follow an announcement this week from Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who said that if the private sector doesn't step up to build natural gas power plants in Texas, the state would build them and contract out the operations. To spur the private sector, the state is dangling the $10 billion Texas Energy Fund, which would supply largely low-interest loans to developers of natural gas power plants. Thousands of small oil operators, landmen, and geologists gather in downtown Houston each year for NAPE. It is known in the industry for fostering an environment where independent producers can search for oil and gas land and broker business deals. Abbott told the crowd that he aims for Texas to maintain its number one spot in energy production, whether it's oil and gas or solar and wind. Quote, we don't care what type of energy you make, we just want you to make it, he said, and we want you to help us be number one in energy in our state. NGL Energy expanding Lee County water pipeline. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Just as natural gas pipelines have been busy expanding their capacity, water pipelines are also in expansion mode. NGL Energy Partners recently announced that its NGL Water Solutions has begun expansion of its Lee County Express pipeline system from a capacity of 140,000 barrels of water per day to 340,000 barrels per day this year. The addition of a second large diameter pipeline, disposal wells, and facilities will greatly expand the capabilities of NGL's existing produced water super system and create a significantly larger outlet for produced water disposal within the Delaware Basin. The construction of the 27-mile, 30-inch produced water pipeline will transport water to areas outside the core of the basin, thereby further diversifying NGL's geographic location of its disposal operations. The LEX II expansion is fully underwritten by a recently executed minimum volume commitment contract that includes an acreage dedication extension with an investment-grade oil and gas producer. Quote, NGL remains focused on our commitment to deliver reliable produced water management for our customers while remaining focused on the environment and the sustainability of our operations, commented Doug White, Executive Vice President of NGL Water Solutions, in a statement. Continuing the quote, today's announcement highlights our investment in the long-term future growth and reliability of our infrastructure, which provides our customers with confidence to plan their long-term developments in the Delaware Basin. This large minimum volume commitment provides additional cash flow certainty to the partnership as NGL continues to improve its balance sheet, end quote. NGL owns and operates an integrated network of large diameter wastewater pipelines, disposal wells, and produced water handling systems in the Delaware Basin. NGL's Water Solutions segment operates in several of the most prolific crude oil and natural gas producing basins, including the Delaware, Eagle Ford, and DJ basins. Oil prices climb as Mideast tensions rise more. This story was written by Miller McEwen, oil editor. Rising concerns about conflicts in the Middle East and their impact on crude supplies sent oil prices sharply upward this week, recovering almost all the previous week's 7% slide. At the same time, natural gas prices hit a slippery slope. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose all five trading days, rising in 50-cent increments until Thursday, when Israel rejected a truce plan and WTI climbed $2.36 per barrel. WTI added 62 cents Friday to end the week at $76.84, up from $72.28 last Friday. The posted price closed the week at $73.32, according to Plains All American. Natural gas futures sank four of five trading days to close below $1.90 per MCF. After posting a marginal increase Monday to open trading, natural gas fell 7 cents Tuesday, 4.2 cents Wednesday, 5 cents Thursday, and a further 7 cents Friday to end at $1.84 per MCF, well below $2.07 per MCF at last Friday's close. Natural gas prices closed this week is the lowest since September 2020, according to East Daily Analytics. East Daily Analytics said the April's futures contract is around $1.94 per MCF, and May is barely above $2 at $2.04. Quote, weak fundamentals have prevailed, with above-normal winter weather taking center stage to limit demand in a severely oversupplied market, the analyst told the Reporter Telegram by email. While winter storm Heather in mid-January put a dent in production, resulting in losses of about 2.6 billion cubic feet per day for the month, the ensuing recovery of production over the past 3 weeks has changed market dynamics swiftly as net withdrawals from storage have returned to levels well below the five-year average, end quote. The analyst noted that the week ending February 1st saw the Energy Information Administration print a minus 75 BCF withdrawal, an astounding 118 BCF below the five-year average withdrawal for the same week. The market is also preparing for a weaker withdrawal for the week ending February 8th and February 16th, where the surplus of gas in storage versus the five-year average could climb by 130 BCF to 378 BCF. Below normal cold weather could be on the horizon for the period February 17th through 21st, but the market has largely shrugged this off as being too little too late, the analyst wrote. U.S. Permian add drilling rigs. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Drilling activity reversed last week's downward trend, posting an increase for the third time in the last 4 weeks. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said the U.S. rig count it has issued weekly since 1944 added 4 rigs for 623 rigs active across the U.S., the highest level since mid-December. Even so, the count is 138 rigs, or 18% below the 761 rigs tallied last February. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil remained at 499, down 110 rigs from 609 last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas added 4 rigs for 121 rigs, the highest level since September, but down 29 rigs from the 150 drilling for natural gas a year ago. Texas bucked the upward trend, dropping 2 rigs for 301 rigs at work throughout the state, down 69 rigs from 370 reported last year. New Mexico gained 3 rigs for 101. Oklahoma, 1, and Utah, 1, joined Texas as producing states to see a decline. California, 1, Louisiana, 3, and Pennsylvania, 2, joined New Mexico in seeing gains. The Permian Basin continued its upward trend, gaining 2 rigs to see 313 rigs working in the region. That's down 39 rigs from a year earlier. The Permian was the only major producing basin to report a gain this week. Eddy County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian with 54 rigs, down 1. Lee County, New Mexico, saw the biggest jump, adding 4 rigs for a total of 44 this week. Martin County reported 37 rigs for a second week, while Reeves County dropped 2 rigs for a total of 28. Loving County had 24 rigs, up 1. Midland County had 22 rigs at work within county lines for a second consecutive week. Upton County reported 17 rigs for a second week. Ward County had 14 rigs for a third week, followed by Reagan County with 13 rigs, unchanged for the week. Howard County had 11 rigs for a third week. Energy-focused software-as-a-service firm Enverus said its U.S. rig count added 5 rigs for 673 during the week ended February 2nd. That's down 178 rigs, or 21%, from 851 last year. EOG Resources and Occidental Petroleum were topping the list of 10 U.S. operators by rig count with 30 rigs each, down 1 from the previous year and up 2 for Occidental from the previous year. Enverus's Permian rig count rose 1 rig for 326, still down 43 rigs, or 12%, from 369 last year. The Delaware Basin was the most active play, with 176 rigs, up 2 for the week, but down 21, or 11% from the previous year. The Midland Basin followed with 124 rigs, down 1 for the week, and down 26 rigs, or 17%, from 150 last year. According to Enverus, its trailing 30-day drilling permits totaled 673 for the Permian as of January 19th, the most recent date available. Enverus also said the Permian led in the number of frac crews with 114, up 3 from the previous week, but down from 141 last year. That's far and away more than second place Gulf Coast with 32 crews.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, February 10th, 2024. Religion. Churches take Ash Wednesday to the streets. On Ash Wednesday, February 14th, Connection Christian Church will join its ecumenical partners in Odessa for Ashes to Go, a fresh approach to a centuries-old Christian tradition. In the Christian tradition, Ash Wednesday marks the start of the holy season of Lent, a time for preparation for the celebration of Easter. For centuries, Christians have received a cross of ashes at the beginning of that season as a reminder of God's love. Ashes to Go provides the opportunity to participate in that tradition for people who have lost their connection to a church, work during their church's services, or have never participated before. Ashes to Go is about the mission of our church, connecting people to Christ and community. We are bringing the important traditions of our faith out from behind church walls and into the places we need them every day, remarked the Reverend Dr. Don Weeks, co-pastor of Connection Christian, in a news release. We are blessed to share in this Christian tradition with diverse churches serving together to mark this holy day. In Odessa, Ashes to Go will be offered at the following places: 7:30 to 8:30 a.m., Stripes at 8001 Highway 191. 10 a.m., Market Street on JBS Parkway with Father Rick Lopez of the Odessa Episcopal Community. Noon, corner of Tanglewood and Pembroke. 2 p.m., Medical Center Hospital with Chaplain Doug Herget. 4 to 5 p.m., HEB parking lot at 42nd and Grandview. 6:30 p.m., Connection Christian Church in an ecumenical worship service with First Presbyterian, Westminster Presbyterian, and Bethany Christian Churches. Contact Reverend Dr. Don Weeks at drdon@odessaconnection.church or call 432-332-2954 for more information.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.